Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, the Pop Life Podcast today, January 12th, I just said it, the 22nd. When my barber's back, I think. Supposedly.
That's like, you know, the date, but the date your barber's back.
Yeah, exactly. I committed a crime. I went and got a cut. But I was, it's half a crime, in my opinion, maybe not. I let the people decide, because I was going to go to a whole nother shop. But I was like, but then I don't know these niggas. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Dominican barbers are pretty good, so I don't think anybody would have fucked me up. But I was like, I went to somebody else in the shop.
So is it worse to go to somebody else in the shop than go to another shop? Like, I'm isn't it sure. Kind of like cheating in the family or something?
Kind of, but the thing is, like, they know, when I walked in, the dude said, you know, in the broken English, the dude said immediately, like, he's not here. He's gone for a month. Right.
Okay.
Like, he's like, he's gone, because he thought I was coming, like, I didn't know.
Right.
You know, they see me come on time. So they, I didn't know. He's gone for a month. And I was like, yeah, I know. Like, but I need a cut. He was like, all right, cool. And he did a good job. He's fine. But I mean, he knows that it's just, that was just for that.
Right.
But my barber, God bless him, Marcos, he don't speak no English. So what he does, and you know, technology is love, he'll say something and then he'll show it to me on the phone and it translates.
That's how me and my super communicate.
Mm-hmm.
No, or I'll go to Google Translate and mm-hmm. say, this nigga been my super for 10 years. He ain't picked up no more English words.
And they ain't trying to.
Does he have to. It's a whole third of the building that don't speak no English. It's but like, see,
that's the thing about our neighborhood. We're the minority with the English.
Like, we got to adjust to them.
Them motherfuckers, everybody speaks Spanish up here. Everybody. Yeah. And they speak the Spanish to you immediately because they assume you're Dominican. Immediately. Everybody's like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no English pop. You know what I'm saying? No Spanish.
And I was kind of fussing at myself actually over this past year because I had to deal with my super so much at the end of the year with the move. Cause I was like, you know, I can communicate at the hair salon. I can communicate at the bodega. I can communicate to a taxi driver. Cause you don't have to say a whole lot, mm-hmm. but I actually have to have more of a grasp.
It's a conversation. Yeah.
About my apartment. Oh, somebody's on fire. To talk to my super about my apartment. So I got a bone up on my Spanish. I speak less Spanish now than I did when I was like in high school and college, which is ridiculous. Yeah. I can understand a lot more.
I mean, I can pick up.
I just can't grasp it to be conversational in it.
Yeah, I could pick up on some things, but I definitely cannot have a conversation. You know what I'm saying? I could kind of just get by. Sean is
rest in peace, Talib. I'm gonna miss him. I mean, he ain't dead, but
I'm about to say what?
No, he ain't dead, but I don't fuck with him anymore.
Okay. You got me shook there for a second.
Yeah, I know. This ain't the time to make those jokes.
So much
terrible
going on.
Segue, but
we lost comedian Louis Anderson to cancer. Rest in peace, Louis Anderson. Funny guy. Been around a long time. Who's that?
I thought you were just running down names. You're actually talking.
I wasn't gonna mention Meatloaf. I mean, I guess no diss to the dead, but you know, he was MAGA and he was proudly unvaccinated.
Yep,
and a COVID denier.
And a COVID denier and all that. So, you know, this is what happens, bro. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, he put his game down for sure. Like, he made, you know, big records and one of the best-selling albums of all time, you know, honestly. But, like, he walked into the lion's pit and then got eaten. I mean, I don't know what you want me to do. Like,
right.
God bless. God bless, exactly. Andre Leon Talley.
Andre Leon Talley, which I know we're going to talk about him more at length. I want to give a shout out because I know a lot of my stars listen to the show. We tragically and suddenly lost our newly installed. Like, she just became president in November.
She's like 50 something.
No, she actually was in her. I can tell
40s?
You how old she was. She was in her 60s, but like early 60s.
Okay.
But hold on, I'm gonna tell you in 1 second. But had been like, sorry, I should actually say her name. Our president, Cheryl Hickman. Cheryl had been, she's from the Eastern region, which is my region. So a lot of New York stars, especially who are very active, knew her because she was made of South Carolina State. But she's been, you know, regional, various national offices. So she's been climbing through Delta leadership.
Very, very involved.
You know, for years and very involved. Yeah. So, you know, as is usually the case with somebody who ascends to the president, like our first national vice president who will now be stepping in for her was the regional director when I came in. So I know her because our chapter had a relationship with her. So a lot of tributes from Soros talking about her, and she was very, you know, obviously well loved and well liked and well respected. And it's also just really, we've never had a sitting president die, you know, it's kind of crazy. And also, again, she was just installed in November. So
yeah.
I think it might have been COVID because it was very sudden and obviously very heavy, you know, very quick and serious.
Yeah, it wasn't like she had cancer or something that she was.
Right, right. So we all knew she was ill. We didn't know what. So, yeah, I just want to acknowledge that. And also, I am not as familiar with him, but there is a, you know, we have a lot of Buddhist and Zen people that we all know. And apparently there's like a really important, I need to look up his name before I try to say it, but a very like important Buddhist leader and philosopher who just passed. I saw Sophia.
That was in the church.
I saw Sophia Chang post about him. I saw Derek post about him, and his books are like bestsellers on Instagram for mindfulness and all of that other stuff. So I mean, I'm just saying to say it's like
it's a lot of death going on. Yeah. So yeah. Andre Leon Talley passed away of allegedly of COVID. He was 73 years old. Long time fashion icon. Worked for Vogue. I don't remember how many years he worked for Vogue. Worked for Vogue for many, many years. Was born in Durham, North Carolina. Went to North Carolina Central University. A lot of people didn't seem to know that he went to a black school. But a man of his age didn't have many options, you know, to go to black school.
Especially
anyway.
Growing up in Durham.
That's what I'm saying.
Jim so he went there.
Exactly. Yeah. So he went there and then went to Brown University at grad school in the late, I guess, early 70s, which is, you know, pretty incredible. From there, we studied art and architecture, ended up moving to Paris and got into the fashion world there. And, you know, really, you know, interesting life, interesting career. Was, you know, kind of like the only black person in fashion of note. And I don't mean to disrespect anybody else, but, you know, kind of like the only one kind of inside the building for many years.
For a very long time.
And it was right, Anna Wintour's right hand for many, many years. They ended up having a falling out based on, you know, according to, you know, legend, she was, you know, upset with him because he started gaining lots of weight. He lived with depression. He was a depressed man for many, many years. It wasn't like now. So it wasn't, I don't think it was fully diagnosed. I don't know if he even ever went to kind of therapy and stuff for it. I don't know. He went to church. He went to church a lot. I used to see him in Harlem. I used to see him driving down 145th Street. He had the first Benz, not truck, but it's kind of like a minivan. I forget the ML or whatever. I used to see him because I lived in that area, and I would see him like driving to church on Sundays and stuff. You know, he was always waving and stuff. But it was a loss. He went through heavy depression. He gained lots of weight.
Andre was one of those people. He was kind of like I don't want to say like a Luther, but Luther comes to mind because there was a period where he would gain weight and then he cut a lot of weight at one point.
Up and down, yo-yo.
He went up and down, but for the last few years, like, the capes kept getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. And
he couldn't walk.
Yeah, you started seeing him. I don't think Andre's worn a real pair of shoes in a while. Like, he would have on full formal wear and have on, like, Uggs. And then the last couple of Met Galas that he was a correspondent for, he was seated the whole time.
Yeah, he couldn't, like, couldn't
even do a commentary because he just couldn't stand and walk and
even in him. the later years, all the pictures he's in, he's sitting. He's always sitting. But you know, he was a, you know, he was, like I said, he was depressed. He went through a lot. He never found love. You know, I don't know how. I watched his documentary. I don't know how comfortable he ever was with his sexuality. So he never was like open with it, so he never found love, and he ended up kind of, you know, a lonely man at the end because he had because a lot of his fashion friends who he thought were his friends abandoned him. He was up in White Plains, so he wasn't in the city, so he wasn't moving in the mix. And you know, he died a lonely man.
And also, but what I will say is that everybody who I saw post about Andre, everybody Black, shared just how open he was and accessible. Like, if you saw him out in an event and you approached him, especially as a Black person, like, he would greet you, he would talk to you. He was incredibly witty and funny.
Yeah, and smart. He was whip smart.
Yeah.
People think he was like a kind of like a clownish type of a dude, but like, that was just his manner. But he was actually whip smart, and he really knew his shit. He knew, like, if you ask anything about like 14th century French architecture, he'd be like, you know, spit it out. He was really, really smart man. I just wish that, and I don't know obviously why or how, or you know, if he tried and it didn't happen, but I just wish that he would have had a couple people that he kind of brought along. You know, I know he talked to everybody, and there was people like, you know, Andre Walker and some of the young, you know, Dame Dash posted a nice thing saying like how much he helped Dame when Dame was deeper to the fashion game with Rachel Roy and stuff. So I'm not saying he was, like you say, he wasn't like a unapproachable, like, you get you niggas away from me type of dude. But I just wish it was some people that he'd have been like, yeah, I brought her in and she's at Vogue doing what I used to do.
I think that was part of the problem with him and Anna, right? Like, even though he had a title, he didn't really have the power.
He didn't have the autonomy at all.
He didn't have the autonomy. And you know, it's Condé Nast. Like, Condé Nast is a monster.
It's a huge corporate monster. Yeah. Like you said, it's not just like one little thing. It's a big conglomerate.
It's a big conglomerate. Even though there is, I would argue, because I want to say, I think Italian Vogue has a Black EIC.
I know the British Vogue.
Or it's a British Vogue. British Vogue has a
Black EIC. They have, it's a man.
I would argue that he wouldn't be there had there not first been. And Andre. But I just think that bringing people into editorial when you work at a legacy white publication or what's considered a white publication, like if you're at a Vogue or a Vanity Fair or something like that, and you aren't the actual editor. Like, he was a creative director, right? So they were probably like, make the book look pretty. We don't give a fuck about who you want to bring in and staff. You know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't assigning the writing and shit. So I think that might have been a challenge for him. But he always did champion new Black designers.
Well, I would just say, see, his lane, I think he made it say, because him and Anna would go to all the showings, even before the show. They would go to like they would kind of do private showings for Anna and Leon before their show. Like, Marc Jacobs, these guys were like, what do you think? Like, should we change this? So he was always there for that. And again, so that opened up his network of a bunch of designers. And he definitely like touched the Black designers in that way. Like, okay, like, you know, do it like this and do it like that. And show, because I know that he had conversations with Kanye and, you know, so on. And, you know, but I'm not here to disparage the man. You know, he passed away, and, you know, he lived his life. So
he lived his life very, the thing about what I loved about Andre was that, I mean, he was a huge man. He was 6'6". And like we said, he, you know, gained weight over the years. So you weren't going to miss him in the room. So no. He was like, since you looking anyway, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to give you, there was a lot of drama with Andres.
I'm going to give you something to talk about.
I mean, really, the capes were fucking legendary. It's amazing. The cape game.
Incredible.
I'm going to become that person. When I got like 15 more years before I start caping it up. You're going to see me with opera capes.
Listen, the caftans everywhere. Have already started.
Oh, my I have a whole caftan drawer. Like, it's real.
Inga over here turned into Miss Roper.
I got the caftan.
Don't worry about what's under my caftan. Just know that I'm comfortable and I'll show that. All right.
We're moving on. The last thing I want to mention, very sad, is the passing of Ian Alexander Jr., who was Ian Alexander and Regina King's son, 26 years old, of suicide. I mean, it's I guess it's been kind of confirmed that it was suicide. I know his dad. I haven't seen Ian. He moved to L.A.
I haven't seen him
in a long time.
He's like music industry adjacent.
Yeah, he was in the industry.
Was Ian at like Quest or something? Where was Ian? I feel like he
was at Quest. Ian was at Quest years ago. He was working with, I think he didn't bring it to me, but he worked on her first album. But I know Ian from Chris Lighty. Chris and Ian was, you know, homeboys from the Bronx. And Ian was just like, you know, Ian would just be running around, like on the clubs, blah, blah. And Ian became very cool back then. Like, I knew him from Chris, and like, you know, just hanging out all the time. But he moved to L.A., like you said, and he, you know, worked the Quest, and he married Regina, and they had Ian Jr. This is just awful. This kid was only 26 years old.
Yeah, just turned 26, apparently. And I mean,
he was on the New Year's show with Regina.
Yeah, and I mean, we talk a lot about mental health in the Black community, and I think when we talk about it, we tend to kind of focus on, you know, older men who are maybe still carrying trauma from childhood and stuff like that. But that 18 to like 26, 27 year old space, that's actually like the crisis point, which is unfortunate. And you know, obviously I'm not going to suggest in any way that the family, you know, could have done anything. That's the thing about depression and suicidal tendencies. Like, you don't always see it. There aren't always signs. You know, he might've seen fine. You know, we really will never know. Yeah, we'll never know. But my heart breaks for them.
It's awful.
I can't imagine.
It's just terrible. It's just terrible. So,
I can't imagine. No. Oh, I did want to say the name, the Buddhist monk who died. His name is, I'm going to fuck this up, Thich Nhat Hanh. He's like considered the world's foremost Zen master. Like, his books are all over the place. And like the whole mindfulness movement, like, that's his shit. Like, you know, I just wanted to acknowledge.
Okay.
That's a lot of people talk about. Yeah.
All right. Oh, so
peace, everybody. We're gonna lighten it.
Yes, wilding. We'll get into some other things later, but I want to lighten it up for a minute. I just want to start the whole show being so heavy. I'm springing out for Pop Fight Podcast listeners.
Did we talk about Ronnie Spector last week?
Yeah,
no, we didn't.
I brought Ronnie up last week.
Okay, yeah, we did. I can't even keep up. Okay, I'm just making sure.
I'm springing a new segment on the Pop Life members,
which means it's gonna last two episodes.
Yeah, it'll last like till maybe Valentine's Day. Then
it'll last.
Yeah, whatever. But I'm springing a new segment on you. No. This one might last longer because it's literally going to be up to y'all three to keep this going. Not moi. This new podcast, this new segment is called, and this is based on Nye, this new segment is called, What Are Y'all Watching? Because I'm tired of young niggas being like, we only talk about what you watch, nigga. So,
Lord.
One of two ways. We could do... Okay. Each of y'all could get one a week, or y'all could shift weeks, or however y'all want to do it. Y'all talk on that separate chat. I know y'all got when y'all talking shit about me.
You know, separate chat.
Separate chat when y'all tell this nigga crazy. Yeah. He's a heathen. So this week, I'm gonna start with you, Nye. What are you watching?
So this week I binged Yellow Jackets on Showtime.
I'm gonna watch this.
It's wild. It's so wild. It's like one half kind of supernatural horror, and like one fourth psychological thriller, and like one fourth mystery whodunit. Basically, the premise is there was a girl's in New Jersey. I'm not sure. I think like Central Jersey, maybe even South Jersey. There is a girls' soccer team who makes it to nationals in 1995, six, somewhere like that. And the short version is that their plane goes down on the way to nationals. And we know from the first episode that only a handful of what might have been like 12 to 20 people, only like less than five of them actually survived. But they were stuck in the woods. They were stuck in the wilderness for like a year and a half, right? So we know that there's this whole big thing of, well, what did y'all do? What did y'all, you know, what really happened out there? And we see some flashes that suggest like some ritualistic stuff, perhaps some cannibalism, but it's like really, it's like flashes. So the entire season is unfolding. They're all coming back together because it's 25th anniversary. So it's class of 96. It's 25th class reunion. And so they're coming back together. So it's like a flash between their lives now as adults, the surviving ones, and them carrying some secret together that you know about, and flashing back to what actually was happening out in the woods after the crash. Mm-hmm. It's fucking crazy. And every episode is like, because the first episode I was like, yo, these flashbacks are nuts, what the fuck is going on? But like by the time you get to the end of that second episode, you're locked in. But every episode is increasingly more, what the fuck, what? And Christina Ricci and Juliet Lewis are both in it. They're really good in it. And Christina Ricci especially, like, she disappears. I didn't know it was her until like the fourth episode. So yeah, it's a crazy watch. It's a great binge. It's a little gory. And if you're in it the first episode, you're kind of like, what is this shit? I'll say just stick in it like at least three episodes and you'll be all in.
Okay. All yeah. Right. Bro, since you got, are you there? Oh, there you go. Yeah. Bro, what are you watching, nigga?
I actually been binging on Veep. I didn't watch Veep in real time.
Ah.
Veep is excellent.
Nigga, like, what did I tell you? That shit's hilarious.
It's so funny.
And she makes the Nancy Reagan joke about sucking cock, and it is like so like on time and on point that it is just, it was incredible. It's a really good show. It's an easy watch too.
But a lot of shit happens in that. I mean, when you know, as the series goes, like a lot of shit happens. Like it's an easy watch, but there is a constant like unfolding like, stories.
You miss an episode and you're like somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Wait, Sean, we lost your sound. We lost your audio. No, you sound like you're underwater.
Yeah. You think you're far away.
I think it's because he's on his phone.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. No, I was just, Nick, just stay there.
don't move, Nick.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been watching Veep, man. That's really been my binge kind of go-to things. It's a really easy watch, and I'm glad I've kind of gotten to it at this point. I'm watching the other shit that you guys have watched, Cheer and all of the other, you know, normal stuff. I'm sure we'll get into that soon.
Okay. Okay, Inka, what are you watching?
All right, so we have moved from season 3, episode 8 of Bubble Guppies to now season 3, episode 1 of our hyperfixation on Bubble Guppies. So that's the get ready for school episode, and we're all in, and I know it by heart at this point.
Is it popping?
No, it sucks. but seriously, I watched Encanto.
Oh, how is it?
I've seen
it. I'm gonna watch this weekend.
I think I've seen it three times in full. It's really good. It's really beautiful. And as a millennial, you absolutely relate. The grandma is the villain.
You're the only millennial on this joint.
Clearly, but
for those who don't know, Inka be smooth with her. She throws mad shots, but she be mad right. smooth with it. So later on, you be like, "Wait, what?
Like me and Sean are talking. Jess might be a boomer. We're not sure.
I think it could disagree earlier.
Jeff is from the greatest generation.
Jeff is from the greatest generation.
I watched the Charlie Chaplin doc coming on, and I was like, "Shit."
Jeff was like, I remember when we used to sit around the radio and listen to Joe.
This was Joe Lewis.
We heard War of the Worlds.
Exactly. So that shit really happened. You know?
I'm not calling you old. I'm just saying.
Anyway,
in the movie, there's someone for everyone to relate to. There's like a black sheep of the family. There's someone who has no idea what her path is and what her gift is. There's someone who is crushing under the pressure of being perfect. There's someone who is carrying literally the weight of the family on her shoulders. So, and then there's all the parents that are silent and like the grandma's running things. So there's a lot to relate to there. And it's very beautifully done. So good job, Disney.
Yeah, I feel like parents are in it. I've seen, obviously I'm not following any friggin' 7-year-olds on social media, but adults are into it. Like,
and the music is so, so good. Lin-Manuel Miranda had a hand in the music and the representation is fantastic. There's some, you know, it's not all like singing and dancing. It's like a good story. Right. So I like Encanto. I think y'all should watch it. But the series that I'm watching that I binge from time to time is The Good Wife.
I need to get into that.
That's Sean's show.
It's a great show.
I'm watching it for the second time.
That show was like the demarcation of me really understanding the difference between an entertaining show and a good show. Mm-hmm. And that's a good show. That is a well-written, well thought out, well placed, very meticulous story show versus it just being entertaining. And they both serve their purpose, right? But like that is a really good show.
And Sean, do you also watch The Good Fight?
You know what? I haven't. It is, you know, I can tell you why. I probably will now because of Paramount. But I initially had the CBS app, and to be quite honest, it was just a little cumbersome and not very
easy. Yeah, the CBS app is trash. Oh my God, it's terrible.
Yeah, it was really just like,
we lost your audio.
Wait, move back to where you were standing.
Jeff said, hold the co-hanger up. Put the co-hanger back up.
Wild to me. This is wild to me. But anywho, there's another show on Netflix with Kush Gumbo who is in The Good Fight. You might want to check that out. She's British, so it's one of them British, you know, weird series you'll probably enjoy. Jeff will probably like that with some butter like pecan Kush and piece of pound cake.
Wait, The Good Fight is Kush Gumbo is in something else.
Not Gumbo. Why.
No, that's her name, Kush Gumbo. Oh, Jumbo. But she's in something I just watched.
He's like, whatever.
Oh, no, she's in Stay Close, right? She's in Stay Close.
Yes.
Oh, is that the black woman?
She was on Broadway right now.
Yeah, she's a good woman to Stay Close. I knew that name from somewhere.
The Good Fight is Christine Baranski's spinoff from The Good Wife. Because Juliana Margulies was like, I've been doing this for, what was it, like 10 seasons? She's like, I'm out of here. Yeah. But it made me a huge fan of Christine Baranski, who's already like really good. But
I love Christine Baranski, and I'm interested in seeing her. I've seen her do drama. She does drama, but I've not seen her do a lot of drama. You know, Christine is usually like a dry comedy person
and like a good singer. I feel like she's done a
lot. Yeah, she's a Broadway. She's one of them theater people.
Yeah.
So I've started The Good Wife like 2 or 3 different times. You know what happens? I started while I'm doing something like as background. And then this happens. I will start a new show. And then the next day I'll be like, I was watching something and I'll totally forget what it was that I was watching. And I just don't go back to it. So I got to remember. Oh, I know what else. Speaking of which, I've also watched a series called Archive 81, I think it's called, on Netflix.
With the dude from Corpse, right?
Yeah. It's like, if you're looking for something, like if you're doing something and you're looking for something to have on and you just, you're doing a binge day and you just want to watch something, it's worth watching. It's kind of like a horror suspense. Oh, I'm good. It's like super, I won't call it horror. It's more supernatural. It's a little supernatural. It's kind of like The Ring-ish without being as over the top. Mm-hmm. It's about a guy who restores fire damaged articles and things. And he's hired by this really mysterious company, black guy. He's hired by this really mysterious company that is clearly like a bunch of shelter companies hiding it, to restore some stuff from a fire damage like 20 years previous, maybe, and or like 15, 20 years previous. And in restoring it, he realizes that there's some occult activity that he's uncovering and that his father had something to do with it. His father, who died in a fire as well, shortly after.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of interesting how it all comes together. It's a little hokey at some points. But like I said, it's worth the watch if you want something to watch. It's not, like Sean said, there's entertaining and there's great. It's entertaining. You know, it's not like, oh God, this plot was fire, but it's worth, you know, it's worth watching. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, Ozark is back today. That's what we're watching tonight.
Ozark?
Yeah.
You know, I failed on Ozark towards the end of the first season because I was getting, this happened to me in Billions too. I was getting anxious. I've noticed this happens more as I get older. I get anxious at certain plot points because I know something really, really bad is about to happen and I can't force myself to sit through it and watch it. So either I have to fast forward through it or I bail on the show altogether. It's very weird. And I did that with Ozark at a point where shit was getting really thick. And I was like, I can't. And I did it with Billions when I thought he was about to get arrested. And I was like, I can't do it right. And then I have to come back later.
My issue is when they have these really long gaps, it is very, very difficult for me to get back into a TV show. I mean, I think Ozark, now, what are we talking about? 2 years now?
Almost.
Close, I want to say like 20 months, 21 months.
Yeah, that's
like that.
That's a significant time to.
You got to go back and rewatch.
I totally understand it's a pandemic, right? Like, that's not lost on me. However, like at the rate that we consume content now, that is a lifetime. That's a fucking lifetime.
Yeah, you got to
go. I'm watching a whole nother series for HBO.
Like, the kid, I started watching, and I'm like, this nigga got muscles and a mustache now. He was 9 years old two episodes ago. What the fuck is going on?
That's the struggle they're gonna have with Stranger Things when it comes back too. Them kids gonna be grown.
Yeah, them kids are grown.
They grown. Like,
they fucking. What are you talking about?
Exactly. This nigga was fucking. I'm watching this series on Netflix called DP. It's Korean, but it's super dope. It's about this guy who joins he's like a fuck up, young guy, he's a fuck up. So he ends up joining the military, and he kind of gets somehow fast tracked to become a military policeman. And so the series is about every episode they're finding deserters. And like, kind of like, you know, why these people deserted and what happened. And so some will be, you know, bad, and some will be because they needed to do stuff for their family. And it's kind of like, you know, the mystery, how they track them down. And, you know, so it's very interesting. It's like, I think it's 8 or 10 episodes, but it's very well done.
That is the most Steven Seagal-ass plot line. that shit is straight out of 1987, that plot line.
I'm telling you, DP is dope, though. This shit is dope.
No, I'll check it out.
Check it out. It's really good.
There's another pipeline we need to talk about in America, and that is white male fuck-up who goes in front of a judge and is given the choice of the military,
right,
and then is made a military police officer. And then when they get out of the military police, becomes an actual police officer.
And is an asshole in a minute.
So many people come right through that pipeline. Yep. And
were you seeing that when you were in?
Oh, yeah. All military police are assholes, first of all, because they have no real like power or jurisdiction even. They just out here, you know, giving speeding tickets and whatever, controlling access to the base. But then they get deployed or get put into like a war or something. And now you're kind of policing these people that live in the country we're occupying. So you think of everyone that's like an enemy, like you're here to really fuck these people up and keep them in line. You bring that mentality right back to neighborhoods in America.
They look at everybody.
I've said that many times. They look at us all as insurgents.
Yeah, that's
why they look at you like that's why someone's like stop this shit, get on the ground, because it's like they're treating you like you're in like they're in Afghanistan still or wherever they were deployed and they say everybody's an insurgent and nobody's human and nobody's worth shit. And obviously black people are on the bottom of that totem pole, so it's like we getting the shit kicked out of us. These guys are still in that mode. That's the only way.
These guys who ain't never had an actual fucking fair, ain't never squared up with their life.
Seriously.
You're walking down the street, they're like, yo, you stop resisting. It's like, what? I'm going to the store. What are you talking about? Okay, you're under arrest. For what? You know, that type of shit.
But a lot of it starts with a judge who's like, go to the military or go to jail. Like, who the fuck is going to pick jail?
Right.
Get a paycheck and a gun.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, mini rant.
We got a lot of black shit coming, Jeffrey.
Oh, yeah.
What you mean?
Black programming. The Janet doc is.
Oh, yeah. That's next week, right? Definitely watching
Friday
that.
Friday and Saturday. And then I sent to you guys that Prime is doing at the top of February a doc on Fat Tuesdays. Which was the black comedy night that Guy Tori, who is Joe Tori's little brother, was doing, started like
in LA.
After Def Comedy Jam. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really about that whole era, what they're calling like the hip hop, what they call, I guess what it's called. I never considered it that way, but it makes sense. The hip hop comedy era, which was that black stand up era in the 90s was incredible.
Yeah.
It was really incredible when it was good.
I was getting ready to say it was a lot of women be shopping. A lot of women be shopping out there.
And it was a lot of white people be like,
White people drink soda like this.
Black people drink soda like that. You know, but this is actually another good doc. I think it's the YouTube. I don't know if it's on television.
The one about Chicago.
That's a very good one too, with Bernie Mac and those guys. It was very well done as well. But like, I'm definitely looking forward to the Janet doc. I can't wait to watch that. Just to see, you know, because I mean, it's just interesting that she's doing this at this point in her life. She's like, I'm gonna let it all hang out. Because she doesn't know.
Like, well, like, let's watch it before we say she said, I'm going to let it all hang out.
Okay.
She ain't letting that much hang out. Like,
all right.
You know,
history
has told us.
Like a Beyonce level letting it all hang out.
Yes. She is not going to let it hang out.
I'm going to let you think behind the curtain, but it's still a very controlled look behind the curtain, I'm sure. But I found it interesting just from the trailer alone is phenomenal. And I found it interesting that, like, so many people she's been romantically linked to are in the trailer. JD's in the trailer. Q-Tip's in the trailer. Who else did I see in there? There's no...
She seems like she's talking about James LaBarge. He definitely has a little section.
She addresses James, obviously. But I think it's more to say... niggas put a lot on it, you know what I mean? But or you know, we were up against the odds, but I could tell they're talking about Renee. It doesn't look like Renee's in it.
Yeah, I don't think he's in it.
Renee Ellis, I know, who we didn't know she was married to until they divorced. Janet, queen of secret marriages. So yeah, it's gonna, I'm really looking forward to it though.
I'm excited about it.
Did
you watch In Just Like That?
Yeah, oh, I man. Did. I'm caught up. Yo, can I just say, because I haven't been talking about it with y'all because I had to catch up. I appreciate them trying to modernize the show, but like, do we have to deal with every single...
Yeah, it's just like Twitter. It's like watching Twitter.
Equality, fucking, like all of them.
Yes, we
deal with everything we got to deal with. And I mean, it's great. It's great to be inclusive, but it really does feel like, and I mean, yes, you live in New York. These are things you're going to deal with, but really we have a transitioning kid and we have late life sexual identity change. And we have, you know, like it's so, like there's so much going on.
And to me, a lot of that's not realistic because three now. Well, I guess four if you want to count Seema, but she's not really involved with the transition stuff. But the three of them are especially Samantha and Charlotte, are extremely wealthy, middle-aged white women. Mm-hmm. And so their world would not be affected by a lot of this shit. Now, I know Charlotte has a child that's going through something, but like them trying so hard, and even Miranda, you know, she's made lots of money as a lawyer, as the character. So them trying so hard to be hip, I don't think that would be realistic. They're like, I don't know.
Well, Charlotte's Charlotte's kind of resistant, because Charlotte's kind of like, why can't everything just stay the same? Which seems very like a character be waspy like Charlotte. She's like, I don't know why we even gotta go through all this shit right now. Exactly. Like, why can't? Because also her kids are teenagers and they're finding their own identity. So she's freaking out about that, because she's like, no, I want to put you in the dresses I gave you. I want your room to be decorated the way I decorated. Like, the fuck are you talking about? So that's true to character for me. And I like this. I like this part where Carrie now is facing like a younger version of herself in her building and looking at herself like the old person. I like that. Like, oh, there's this young hip party girl. Like when she was like, yeah, there's always a naked shoulder. There's always a gold something around her neck. I was like, oh, that was Carrie. You know, 20, 30 years
ago. I had issues with that. I had issues with this week with Carrie, because Carrie broke into that girl's apartment. She walked into that girl's apartment, turned her fucking music down, and looked at her mail. That is crazy talk.
Looking at the mail was crazy, but I absolutely would have walked in there. And
but she was trying to get her name, but the door was ajar.
The door was open.
Why are you niggas acting like this? In New York City, if a nigga's door's ajar, you glance at the jar door and keep it pushing.
In a building where there are like four apartments or three apartments, which is what Carrie's building is. It's a row house with four or three.
I know what it is. No, and you don't.
When the
do
music
that.
Is that loud, she knocked
at
on
4 a.m.
You would have held the ajar door and knocked. You would not have walked in and turned somebody's music down. That's crazy.
She didn't walk in with the intention of turning the music down. First, she just walked in to see what the fuck was going on. She didn't go past the vestibule. It's not like she wandered around the apartment and took a tour.
She poked her head in and saw the radio.
I want to say this is clear perception of what a white woman would do versus what a black man would do.
Right.
The first thing a nigga is thinking is, I don't want my prince on none of this shit, because if there's a white woman dead in that apartment, I don't want to be nowhere near this, right?
In Jeff's eyes,
I totally understand why you would be like, I'm not fucking going in there.
I've literally gone in my neighbor's hallways when their doors are dry to be like, hey, your door is open, hello.
But she she walked in, that girl was laying on the fucking couch. That you, somebody would have been like, oh shit, she's right here. Like,
You're forgetting about the music. The music was too loud for you to be like, hey, anything.
You don't do that, bro. But let's move on.
You don't do that, Jeffrey.
Okay, then we're going to be hearing about Naima getting locked up.
Sean literally just explained it. What does a white woman do with another white woman's space? If dude had been there on the couch sleep, she probably would have backed out. The chick was there on the couch sleep. She looks over, she's like, she got the champagne in her hand. She's like, okay, she's drunk, she's passed out. I got a teenager upstairs. I got to go to fucking sleep. I'm turning the shit. The radio's right. It's four steps into the door. You would not do that, Jeffrey. But a woman seeing another woman sleep on the couch from eyesight, she didn't even have to walk all the way in and see that, and seeing that she can turn the radio off from right there. I believe that.
Also, there is a... Listen, man, like, there's just certain things that we would do that are just culturally different in that particular instance. Right. Because if I know that there's a young kid that's doing, like, I'm not going to fucking call the cops if that's my name. Even if I got a shitty night's sleep, I'll have to step to him in the morning when I see him. Yeah. Like, yo, you got to keep that shit down, B. But I'm not going to call the cops. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, because we know...
Also not get the entitlement of a rich white woman who's lived in that brownstone for 30 years?
So long. I feel like
she
it's her
all
space.
That shit is
she's
hers.
The same
well, she ended up back there because it was too hard to be in the apartment where Big died.
Well, boy died. But let's move
and
on.
She bought a new apartment, but it was too modern and too sleek and too shiny. Right. So she sold it. But really, the whole which was also that. Can we talk about that for a minute? Because I was like, that's a different level of money. Carrie actually bought a new apartment, right?
The bitch that had to be worth at minimum, I'm going to say $5 million.
Yeah. It was like down on the Bowery or some shit like that.
Yeah. It's right on the water.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Marble everything. So
she buys a new apartment. She's in it for like a week and ends up going back to her apartment to sleep because she just doesn't like it. And she's like, I don't like the apartment. And she her old apartment, beeping, which by the way,
the beeping, still the had, beeping.
Was still fully furnished. But she also just didn't like the light. It was too bright. It was too everything. But also like her old apartment, which of course she kept it because she had bought it. We remember that. Mm-hmm. And Big had plenty of money. But it's interesting. She never rented it. It was still fully furnished. It looked like it was a closet, basically. The whole her mm-hmm. old apartment is like her closet. So she goes back to her old apartment and she just tells her realtor, like, yeah, I don't like the new apartment. I don't really want it. She's like, so we'll sell it. And I'm like, you better sell for a week. You guys, like, that's so crazy to me to be like, yeah, I bought this whole new apartment, but fuck it, let's just sell it after a week. Did I be like, you can't even break a lease in New York that easily. It's so crazy to me.
Yeah,
I was like, this is another level of money.
And she and in New York City, you might have made $200,000.
Right.
Yeah.
In that week.
Yeah. So
the last episode. I know you want to talk about Steve.
Yeah.
Listen, she did Steve a favor. Free Steve.
She did. That scene was so beautifully acted. It was heartbreaking. I think.
Well, at the beginning,
for sure. Nobody had any sympathy for Miranda, but I
have issues.
But I feel like Miranda missed.
Like,
listen, bitch, you ain't never happy. The fuck.
But I had issues at the beginning because again, they'd be playing Steve is 55 years old. He's not 83. And they'd be paying him like he's a bumbling idiot. Like, oh, I can't find my hair. What are you saying again? It's like, he's 55. He's 55 and owns a big bar
the
in
the storyline makes sense, but they did. But, they are taking some serious liberties.
I mean, they didn't say he's losing his hearing because of old age. I didn't think they said it was a degenerative.
No, you know, because the actor actually is losing his hearing.
Right.
So they wrote it into the story.
Right,
I'm not saying that it's based on age, but they just the way he carries himself now, he's like this old Jewish man who just can't get it together.
But Steve was kind of that when he was young.
He was always that.
He was always that.
Yeah, but he was a little more edgy, and of course he's older. But
no, he wasn't. Steve was never edgy. Not never.
Steve was always like, let's get home. Like, I'm trying to be on the couch.
I can watch TV.
We don't have to be at this bar.
And it was always right. It was always right. Like, I mean, Miranda. Yeah, like, the only moment Steve had edge was when him and Miranda broke up and he was dating a younger woman for like a second.
I just don't like to be playing like he's a bumbling idiot. But I did like that once they stopped doing the goofy shit at the beginning of the scene, they got into like, you know, you okay, good luck, shorty, like you're buggy, you're never happy, and you think, you know, you're gonna find your happiness at 55, you're just gonna jump out here and just be bopping. Good luck with that. Love don't live here anymore. So right. You can't come back.
That Miranda, even though she told him she met somebody, Miranda still wasn't she honest with him to. That we saw about the fact that she met she was experimenting with her sexuality. Yes. So I don't really, because I'm not gonna say met a woman because she's not they're not binary, they're non-binary. But I don't like the fact that Miranda was just like, I met somebody, and maybe the point is supposed to be that. No, it can't be, because earlier in the episode, I was about to say maybe the point is supposed to be like, that's not an important detail, but that can't be the point, because early in the episode, Miranda sneaks off because she doesn't want her son to see her at an IA rally with Che, right? So what I do think is about to happen is that Miranda hops in this cab, surprised Che, she's going to get her face cracked, because Che's going to be fucking.
Che already told her, I'm not offering you anything traditional.
Yeah.
So she's already told them, I'm going to be fucking other people and be doing my thing. But what they've done slickly with this is they've done the midlife crisis thing, but they've reversed it. Because usually this is the guy who met a younger girl, and he's thinking he's going to like buy a Porsche, and him and this 29-year-old girl, and he's 57, is just going to be bopping and popping all over the place. This is in reverse. It's a 55-year-old woman who thinks she's going to be with this younger hot, and I mean hot physically, I mean like their career. Like, you know, Che is popping, mm-hmm. she's bi-coastal, she's always performing, she's making money, and she thinks this, and she's going to be my Jose. See, again, see, I'm not doing that. Anyway, well, I'm going to try, but it's going to be tough. But I'm saying, but, you know, she thinks that they are going to be lit. It's like, I'm going to be going to stuff with they, and this and that. Nah, you about to get played. Just like the 29-year-old girl plays the old man. And she leaves them, you know. So they've done the midlife crisis thing.
I mean, but Tay did tell Miranda that they're in love with her, too.
That was cap.
Che don't care. They don't lie. Che already said that they don't lie.
She's not a liar. They're not a liar.
Che is not a liar. So it's like, but Che's going to be fucking. Miranda's going to get to Cleveland and Che going to be fucking something. It's going to be nice.
I don't know what the fuck y'all niggas is talking about. But
not only is Che going to be fucking, but Che going to look at her like, I told you I'd be fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why Miranda thinks that's a good idea. Anyway, she can wait till Che gets back. And that's the thing. Miranda.
I'm in a rom-com.
Miranda's but this is also typical because Miranda's always been a very like, and this is also why I said she did Steve a favor. It's always been like, my shit is more important than everybody's shit, right? Mm-hmm. On some, and not on in an obliviously selfish way like Carrie might be, because she's self-absorbed. With Miranda's, it's more like, no, I'm just more important because mm-hmm. I'm smarter, or I'm edgier, or I'm more evolved, or I'm more, you know, it's very much like I think more of myself than I think of the people around me, so my shit is more important. Whereas with Carrie, I'm self-absorbed, right? So I do also find it interesting, though, that they've given every character this friend woman of color, which is also feels like
that's annoying.
Annoying, because I don't think Miranda and that professor would be.
They would not be hanging out. No,
neither would Charlotte and the other lady.
The other girl.
What's her name?
Parker. Yeah. Because first of all, that's her student. Number one, that's her student. Yeah. Like, she's her professor. And like, she would not be like telling her about her fertility problem. It's her fucking student. Like, what do you
mean? Especially after those first two interactions.
Yeah,
like,
no.
It seems not exhausting to
even if they
that.
Had coffee and like, you know, squash shit, they wouldn't be out hanging the fuck.
Even
no.
At the farmer's market.
No,
that's
not. Nah, oh, this is my husband. Not. And all we're supposed to try. No. That shit was
going on. So I think we only got 2 episodes left of this show, so we're going to see where it goes. And it's causing a lot of people have issues with it, but that means people are definitely watching. So I think they'll probably get another season.
Listen, I think that for the most part, I'm really not mad at the way they've advanced the storylines. I think a lot of it is realistic. You know, like, Harry not really wanting to go work out and go to the gym because he literally is an old Jewish man. Like, the fuck? I'm going to sit here and do whatever the fuck I do. I earn it. You know, go ahead.
Also, can we just talk about the number of white penises I've been assaulted with on HBO in the last week of like, what has the what is it? FTC? Have y'all changed the rules?
Yeah, because Euphoria
never needed to see Harry's dick ever.
Nobody Harry's dick.
And even the young nigga that dropped the towel in front of Carrie was like, "What's wrong with that, nigga?" I'm like, "What are we doing?
Yeah, what are we doing without that? It was we knew what was about to happen." Go ahead. And then Euphoria. Oh God. Anyway,
which I didn't. I tried to watch the last episode and I realized I wasn't in the headspace for it. But anyway, so I like some of the ways they advanced the storyline with the women dealing with aging and still feeling younger than they actually are, and what comes along with that, and what comes along with looking at your marriage and your kids getting older and your husband dying and you realizing you're not. I don't know why Miranda married Steve in the first place. She never fucking liked Steve, but like all of these things, and Miranda having a shit kid actually is brilliant, because of course she does. But
confrontation I'm waiting for, actually.
Right.
Yeah, me too.
Because, you know, he's going to get in her ass about all that shit.
He's
going
to spaz. He's going
to
spaz.
But like I said, some of it is they're trying to put, and maybe this is a Sex and the City-ish thing. It's not like I'm ever going to go back and rewatch the show now, but it just feels like they're trying to put too many hot and bloody in it.
Hot button topics.
Yeah, but now I wonder if we're going to go back in these last couple of episodes to Carrie being Carrie again, like she's gonna date, and
I think she's gonna date. I'm just going to date her. Maybe even meet somebody.
Yeah, you know. The next episode, she has the date with the teacher.
I just want to add one thing. I don't watch the show, but I do understand like the concept of when we say hot button issues and things that we see kind of on social media or things that are playing up. And then I think that that has always been a place for writers to draw inspiration. I just think that by the time it meets the screen, we have sort of exhausted a lot of those conversations and then it is sort of run the gamut. And so it just appears, it almost appears lazy, but it's not necessarily lazy. And I think we also have writers and executives that are stressed about feeling like they're being sort of oblivious to the rest of the world and sort of not acknowledging those things. There's a fine balance, right? So we go from like 7 seasons of Sex and the City, where I think we saw like 4 black people. Now everybody got a black friend, right? Like it's clear they are trying to like make up the difference of
absolutely,
you know what I'm saying?
They I appreciate the effort, but it is annoying.
But I, and I do appreciate one of the things that Charlotte deals with Harry is like, oh my God, we don't have any black friends, because the reason that we see so much of Nicole Ari Parker, aside from them being at the same school and them being both like really involved, is that she wants this woman as a friend. And she invites them over and she's like, Harry, oh my God, we don't have any black friends. And the woman invites her over and she's like, well, I was worried because we don't have any other white friends. So I think that was real. But the Miranda and her professor thing, unless that professor, I would have seen it if the professor was like the 90s version of what that professor would be like, you know, the 90s version of like the African-American lit professor with the dreads and the this and the that. Like that person would have been friends with Miranda. This chick?
No. Miranda tiresome. I want to mention Cheer.
I'm watching it.
Yeah, I'm perked up.
So Cheer is a series on Netflix.
I'm going to get a sausage biscuit. I'll be back.
Okay, this is the second season. And they follow two cheer junior college cheering teams and out of a small town in Texas called, I think it's Athens, Texas, in Navarro, Texas.
I believe.
Corsicana, you're right.
Corsicana, and then other teams in Athens. Yeah.
So there are these two small, but these two small teams are the top cheer teams in the country.
In the junior college division.
And they do, you know, they do just like football, they do recruiting and the whole shit. And it's about, you know, their journey to the championships and the backstories of the coaches and the kids. So the first season, I won't, you know, recap much, but the first season went as was. And then we have some returning people, but some not, because it's, again, it's only junior college. It's only there 2 years. So some of them leave and some, well, but a lot,
I don't mean to cut you off. But I don't,
go ahead.
Don't need to dive into season one, but I think
it's... Yeah, so I'm going to skip over season one, because season two was crazy.
I think it's important to acknowledge the hype that came with season one, because I think it really, really influences season two.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that we recognize the level of stardom that those kids
had. The fame monster.
The fame that came into play, because they had done the talk show circuit. They had begun to get like endorsement deals and
things. Big endorsement deals.
Yeah. So season one was a success in a way that I don't think anybody anticipated.
They were
just kind of going to, you know, have a show on Netflix. It'd be cool. You know, people in town might recognize them. Maybe they get.
I'll give my followers up.
Yeah, they'll get an extra fry. You know, maybe there's a cheeseburger in your bag you didn't really ask for. But like, you know, it wasn't going to be this. And so
the
season one success really highlights the conflict in season two.
No, it does. It does exactly. It sets up season two, because now all these issues that come with, like Sean said, having fame, and how fame can be very destructive and very alluring, and people want more of it, and how people are handling the fame. You know, because some of the kids actually handled it pretty decent, but
how
some of the kids
giant microscope on your private life,
on your private life, and on the pro. Exactly.
And so on the program,
So season two, and I'm going to let you jump and take it from here, but season two starts off and they kind of, you know, pick up and they're training for the pro, for the championships, and you see some of them back and, you know, oh, shit, there goes the Darius and shit. Oh, there goes, you know, Gabby and Jen and, oh, shit, there goes Monica, you know, and then, you know, by like episode three or four, it's like, oh, this shit different. This shit is going off the rails. And by seasons, by episode five, this shit is off
by the end the of rails. Five, like you're just like, how does this even end? How do we even, are we going to Daytona? What's happening?
Yeah, because COVID hit. That's the other thing. COVID hits too in the midst of all this as well.
So and Navarro COVID team.
And the winter storm that Texas had hits.
Yes.
As well. All and
those kids were in the dorm for that. All of that happened. Yep. And then so Monica,
I'm going to let y'all take it from here. So y'all run. What did y'all think about it? Y'all, go ahead.
I initially almost didn't finish. So after episode three, I was like, this shit is mad, whiny, and sad. I don't want to watch this. Like, they were underdogs last year. You know what I mean? Or in the first season, they were low-key just trying to get that championship back. And we were watching this great story of these unlikely kids to rise, but I felt like it was almost too much conflict to enjoy. But then you start to get kind of that feel good rise from the competitive, the other, their rival, that's the word I'm looking
for,
Trinity Valley College, which is like black coach who's recruiting all these like straight boys to cheer, which is very different than
that was another
a
layer.
Lot of the cheer environment. But yeah, I almost didn't finish. I'm glad that I was like, you know what, let me just, you know. And then I get to the Jerry episode, which blew me away. I did not expect to hear from Jerry's victims. If you don't watch Cheer, then just know that like one of the most popular kids from the
first season.
The most popular, who ended up a correspondent on the red carpet for the Ellen show.
For the Oscars.
Crazy. For the Oscars.
And the actors knew him.
Yes.
They were running up on him.
They knew Jerry like, from Cheer. He just had this kind of infectious, like, cheer, for lack of a better term. Just like,
Matt talk.
Extremely positive, always rooting for everybody.
That's why I can't watch
And to know that he was a predator.
I think something ain't right with that boy. I mean, I'm not
using that. Well,
right with him, he's a predator.
No. I mean, I think in terms of his development, his actual cognitive development,
he might have a forever young mentality.
I think he is still
probably how he ended up.
I think he's still a teenager developmentally.
If from season one, and they don't talk about this much in season, you know, any at all, season two, but Jerry actually went through a hugely traumatic childhood.
Right.
Like that whole kind of like everything's in it. That's actually like a almost like a defense mechanism because his childhood was mad traumatic. Like his shit was.
Let's also couch that in the fact that people have traumatic childhoods.
And I'm not giving him an excuse.
I'm not even giving him developmental things. Yeah. I think he's not all the way there.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's very, I mean, that is probably the most straight and cut and dry part of this story, right? What happened. It was very clear those young boys were very believable.
They had them and their mom on the show was wild.
That is great producing. In the tree. That is probably several conversations. That is probably a lot of coaxing and not
a lot of legal shit. A lot of legal shit too.
Well, not for them, because they've already put this out there, right? So if you notice, the legal shit is that the legal issue was Jerry, who did not appear on camera post his arrest. Everything they show after his arrest is already filed footage. It is not him in real time. So he does not, you know, come forward at all. These are obviously incredibly serious charges, and what it does is like the behavior. The first thing I thought of was that this is not the first time he's done this. You know, I'm not quite sure. You know,
he had a whole thing how to set it up.
There is also The really good thing about season two, Vontae Johnson, who is the coach, really does a great job at sort of explaining the battles that he had with coming from being a football player to being a cheerleader and what that meant for him, especially being a Texas boy, right? Like when you like that's a very real challenge in Texas and Florida. Yeah. So on top of like being in that Bible Belt space of, you know, you playing sissy games and shit like that told to you, right? Like football is like God, like that shit is like a real religion down there. And so to now be on the other side was very, very interesting, but it was great to show that he was able to A, go to school for free by doing this and make a career out of this. And it was great to see him recognizing that talent in some of those other young Black
boys. I'm about to say he was able to help some other kids.
Because
who
were special, but didn't quite have the things that would have taken them to the next level and said, hey, this is a space where you can thrive and you can go to school for free and you can have these opportunities. And that was really, really great to see. He was very close in age to them. So
it
felt more big brother.
Yeah, and, definitely.
You know, but you know,
I want to say that Trinity Valley staff, their whole setup kind of made me very, very, very happy. It was very smart to have a former judge as the guy who was coaching the kids technically, and very smart to have a choreographer come in at the beginning and then another one at the end to, you know, get what they to really work with the team and what their strengths and weaknesses were. But
and I think that when you watch the show, I think that what you're seeing is you're seeing a organization in Trinity Valley that is really sort of this conglomerate of heads, right? And they all sort of work in unison versus this very opposite side where Monica is like this really sort of dictator and like what I say goes. And and while she is nice, can also be pretty fucking harsh at times.
Hard body.
Yeah.
And
not even trying to hear from the kids. Like they were saying real shit. Like, how are we supposed to be positive when they don't even want to be out there? And she was like, I don't want to hear that shit.
Like, until you win 14 championships. And it was just like, it was just mind blowing to me. But I also recognize. So one of the things that I didn't think they did a good job in was sort of, you don't have a concept of time lapse. So you are not processing all of the things that are happening in real time. And they say, hey, there's a pandemic happening, right? But you're not really grasping that they might have been out of a gym for 3 months. They might not have seen each other. Those little sort of tidbits, they matter. And I get it, right? Like, this is no shot at the production or the editing or any of that sort of shit. Like, they have a hit show. So I'm not saying that. I just would have loved to see a little more concept of time to sort of, like, Monica has that breakdown and she sort of really goes off, but this is like mid pandemic. I think this was post her Dancing with the Stars shit. You know, dealing with a lot of hate. And what people don't understand, and I can say this not from my personal experience, but obviously from my wife, like, that shit is like, motherfuckers can be relentless online. And it's easy to say, don't
look at it.
You know what I'm saying?
But it's not realistic. That's not realistic.
Motherfuckers calling you a nappy-headed hoe is not personal, motherfucker. Like, I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was great. And then, obviously, my last thing was, he needed to go. He needed to get the fuck out of here. and them crocodile ass tears that he was crying was such a play on what he knew. He knew the cameras were rolling.
Remember, Monica asked him, "Do you want the cameras here or not?" She was willing to like tell the cameras to get out.
Go look at that scene again. Not nary a fucking tear streams down his face. He was squeezing.
He was squeezing. He was trying to get one out. It was right here in the corner. It wouldn't hit the nose, though.
It wouldn't hit the nose.
I see both sides with the Ladarius and Monica thing. It annoyed me that she couldn't square the circle of, like, hey, not only did I just lose my best friend, Jerry, who we know did heinous things, but, like, he also had an impact on the team. But I've also been abandoned by my entire family. I never saw my mother again. You filled that space for me, and now you're not taking my calls. And so this was like him, I guess, lashing out when she abandoned him.
When she went to LA, she left.
But I also get that Monica is a person with a whole life that does not revolve around Ladarius. So
the other thing though is this, and he kind of said it too. Everything you said is 1,000% correct. But the other thing hanging that he didn't really say, but you could tell he meant it. He wanted to be the coach. He was mad that she wasn't even involved with the program. She brought her back to be the coach. And he was like, nigga, I'm right here.
I don't even watch it. He ain't got a coach temperament. Go ahead, Sean.
I was literally about to
say he should have been the coach. There's no way he's going to be in charge of these other kids.
In his mind. No, he shouldn't have been. In his mind.
He was a terrible teammate. He was a terrible teammate.
Fucking awful.
And let me preface this also by saying I'm a man of a certain age, and I understand that in looking at him, he is a young man. He has plenty of time to grow, and I really hope that he do. So this is not me throwing a young black kid to the wayside, just saying, you know, whatever. But he needed to learn some lessons here, okay? Yeah. And lesson number one is you got to learn how to fucking operate within a system, okay? Mm-hmm. All this me, I shit with all of these other people watching, okay, was not going to fly. Now, he had an opportunity to come in and learn and understand what this was. He probably would have had a very long career, and he might still have a very long career in this field. But his fucking attitude is atrocious. It's atrocious. It's so bad
you almost missed the talent, because he is extremely talented in theater and dance, and even a little bit of coaching, because it takes a little coaching to not fall on your fucking face and when you're the bottom of the pyramid, et cetera.
He's one of those talents that there are certain people that understand the concepts of the game and not just a position. And those are really valuable people, right? Like, we talk about, and I'm just going to use an extreme example. We talk about, like, Ed Reed, right, who would be able to see all of these different things. So even though he's not a lineman, he knows what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. Because all of these, he studied all of this shit. He knows all of this shit. But you also have to be encouraging. You also have to understand people. There is not one blanket way to coach talent, okay? And you have to understand that. And he really, really just has a terrible attitude. And that's not to mention going on the live and
that was crazy.
Doing that shit for night. I was like, yo, bro, it's like 90 people watching, bro. Like, you out really doing
with a wig on.
There's a lot. And yes, I think he has checked out on her. I think that amends that they made in that hotel room was him understanding that he had lost an opportunity that he may never get back if he doesn't come back here and ease his hand out that lion's mouth instead of snatching it out.
Yeah,
because even the fact that he came to the championships is like, what?
The fact that he was still going to cheer events in that uniform is insane.
In that t-shirt.
Like, he was taking pictures and doing the cameos.
And that was probably his way of earning some side money. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Which I get.
Maybe he was doing some coaching and stuff like that. And, you know, having kids on the side he was going to. And I mean,
he's an all-star coach now. Like, he landed. He's all right. Right.
It's a part of his life, and I really do wish him well, but he needs some, I would say, I don't like to use the word manager coaching, right? But, like, he definitely needs some maturity, and he needs someone to help guide him and learn how to shut the fuck up and sit down and pay attention.
He's always back talking. I got one more thing before we move on with here. And, you know, maybe this is my mind playing tricks on me, though. Was the coach from Trinity Valley, was they in a threesome couple? Because that didn't make sense to me.
Oh.
That was like, they're all fucking, right?
I don't think it was a threesome couple.
Excuse me, what?
But,
what I mean?
No. Okay. Well,
remember the coach, the white coach of Trinity Valley,
who
lived with his old... That's always find a sordid sexual...
No, it was the white coach of Trinity Valley living with his old...
with his old teammate.
And his wife.
Right.
And I was like, but why? You're like 41. You're like, what are you doing?
He's always gone.
I will say this.
Hold on. How do we get to the threesome? What are you talking about?
Because
the white people are a threesome.
Yes, the white people. The three of them.
I don't think that they
were. Get that from the wife.
I don't think that they were a threesome or any of that sort of stuff. However, I do want to say there is a certain point where you're too grown to be living with people. Okay, and when you have a gray beard,
this economy.
When you have a gray beard, my nigga, you are absolutely too old to be in someone's guest room.
I get it. I don't know how much money they make.
Inga, it wasn't temporary. It wasn't like I didn't stay here for a little bit doing my shit because I got...
Clearly, look at how he bonded with the kid. I get that it's not temporary. But
I thought that might have been his kid on the low, but you know.
The man didn't have no family. Anywhere in the area, the dude has a big Texas house and was like, you always got a place here. The nigga lives at the college most of the time, so when he's not at the college, he's at the house. Like, I don't see anything wrong with it. You are special.
He became a full-time employee at the end, remember?
Yeah, I was there, but
he wasn't talking about moving out.
I don't give a fuck what type of employment is occurring. If you closer to your social security check than not, you cannot be out here in my motherfucking guest room, man. Like,
what's your name on orange?
You're telling me you in LA and you in my guest house? If you telling me, you know, you in Miami Beach or you in some, I got it. Now I'm about
how
to check
the rent. How much do y'all think Vontae is paying this man? Part-time to coach at this college.
Let me ask you this question. I don't know that. But how much do you think it costs to rent a little one-bedroom and fucking course?
Oh, give me the dorm room! Give me something!
I'll be all right, nigga.
Something, nigga. You gonna give me a studio or something in this motherfucker. I'm leaving here with something.
I think they in a thruple.
Nigga, you can put an office. Something's got to get... Y'all gonna have to do... That just for me, personally. Now, I get it. What was very weird, too, was how he talked about his failed relationship. He was, like, very intense about a relationship that broke up, like... It seemed like a decade ago, my nigga.
Oh, girl done got married and had kids.
Like, she done she living life, and you sitting here with the what would have happened look on your face was very... I was like, okay, am I missing something here? Because this sounds like a college...
Nah, you ain't missing nothing. They throw
it. Sounds like a college relationship. Southern girl was like, look, I'm not going to be your fucking girlfriend forever. What is we doing? He was like, I don't really want to get married. She chucked him the deuces and went and found somebody and got married and moved on. And now he living with his friend. That's all I'm saying.
The whole story was janky. I know we take a long time with this.
I'm sure we will get more of Coach, what's his name, Greg?
Well, I forget his name. Story was janky because he said that that was his love of his life, but because people in his family had gotten divorced, he didn't want to get married, so he told her, you'll be happier without me. What the fuck
this
are you
is
talking
another
about,
instance
dude?
Of Jeff not understanding that these are white people and their culture is much, much different than anything that we would ever try to do.
I How many niggas you know use getting they heartbroken in second grade as an excuse to not ever get married? That shit.
Which is my second point. All
right. Because when when Alicia Corson was kissing fucking Jason Smith, you know what? I had put my whole heart on the line. And I said right there, I was never going to make it.
Nine, nigga.
I've been hard since I was nine. To Everett and not me.
All right, so let's move on because you're right. Maybe I'm gonna take that. Maybe I'm taking the white side part into consideration. So, anyways, watch Cheer. It's really good this year. Yeah, watch Cheer. It's very good this year.
Because if you are a grown ass man, and you're a part time cheer coach at a JUCO. You ain't got a whole lot of grown man shit going on. I'm just saying.
That's all I'm saying.
All right. Anyway,
I'm just
part-time, go down to the Walmart or something and they working on
the pyramid at 11:30 at night, Sean. And ain't no shift you can work around that.
I wanna say peace to Adele and peace to Silk Sonic. Adele had to push back her Vegas residency because of COVID ravaging her bandmates and her production crew. She came on.
So them tickets was like $800. God bless.
She gonna get the money now. They gonna.
Trying to give people their money's worth. I think that was the part of it. Like I can't have sold.
She's trying to stand up there and do this. They're gonna make a whole. It's gonna be a show. It's gonna be a lot of movement and action. But she gonna get the tickets. Gonna get sold.
Tickets already sold. Them people gone.
I think that it was, in my opinion, I don't have any insight into her production staff. I think that the hotel pressed them to cancel late. I think that they knew that they were going to cancel. I think that the hotel recognized that they had a lot of people booked for rooms that were coming for that concert. And they used that 24-hour rule because if you were able to cancel within your 24-hour period,
get your bread back.
You would have gotten a refund. And when you are not able to do that, at minimum, they were probably going to get 2 days out of people and get them into the hotel and get them eating and drinking. And they're already in Vegas. And why the fuck not? Because you're playing
tickets. We're here.
You're already.
We're seeing the Blue Man Group.
I don't think for one second that I'm not disputing that COVID is ravaging a staff. I'm saying that didn't happen the day before.
Right.
I got you. Okay. Right. And then Peace to Silk Sonic, who's doing a residency starting in February?
February.
Insane.
Yeah.
So I want to go.
Hear about that.
I heard them tickets is dumb expensive.
Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah.
I want to go, but the seat I would have to buy to make sense to also travel to Vegas the way I want to go to Vegas, it financially, like...
That's a
six-G. I'd be sitting in row double Y. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just doesn't...
That's a what?
That's a 5 or 6-G trip.
Exactly. Easy. I'm not doing for Silk Sonic. I mean, I want to see them, but... We're all regular concert goers here.
It's very difficult for me when I see ticket prices is I always go back to like, it'll be like a Victory Tour ticket and that shit will be like $25. And even when you adjust for inflation, nigga, they was going to see Mike for $25, nigga. There's absolutely no way you getting 2 G's from me.
Yo, I was on the floor for Watch the Throne for like $200. Like, what the fuck? I'm just like, and that wasn't that long ago.
That is about my cap.
I remember when $250 was like you on the stage. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you are behind the soundboard.
You don't even go get your drinks at that price point.
Right.
Come and take your drink order. You give them a card. Right. Yeah. But now, like the secondary market and everything that goes into going to a concert is so difficult. And it's just, and honestly, what ends up happening is you're really not there with cool people.
You're not.
Right.
Like it's not fun. It's not very enjoyable.
It ain't.
Yeah, yeah. God bless. Good luck. You know, God. And maybe, you know, maybe this summer, because Bruno was going to do Essence at one point pre-COVID.
Bruno is going to still do Essence. Silk Sonic.
That's what I'm saying. So I'd rather go see them niggas as Essence.
Yeah, it hasn't been announced, but Silk Sonic is doing Essence. All right,
I'd rather go there because that's going to be with the cool people and auntie. I'll spend a little extra paper to do because that's a whole thing.
Yeah, it hasn't been announced, but Silk Sonic is doing Essence.
Yeah, I'll wait to do it this summer.
Which, by the way, if y'all plan to go, I suggest, and I'm talking to listeners too, I suggest y'all try to put your hotel rooms on hold.
I want to say peace to my man Drake, who putting hot sauce in condoms and making sure them gals don't get another baby out of them.
Now, do we think that story's real?
I don't know, but I'll lean towards real than not real, and if you know, because I just. You know, hey, which is bugged out because the girl was allegedly, if it's real, the girl wants to sue Drake for getting caught trying to scam Drake. I'm like, how does that work?
I just want to know how you didn't notice hot sauce was in there. Like, what was you?
Yeah, wouldn't it have
what
been
color like, was the sauce?
Yeah, I'll just.
You know what? The game,
that's why I'm like,
he got caught out there once. He ain't get caught out there again.
Yuck.
Nah, that nigga didn't get caught out there. That nigga was.
Nah, no, I mean, he blazed raw. He was playing. He played himself.
Play himself.
I wanna mention.
I had definitely heard Drake wasn't a fan of condoms, but whatever.
Yeah, I've heard the two that he's going in and let the chips fall where they may. I wanna say is it peace to Eric Adams? I don't know what it is, but his first 3 weeks have been so terrible. Crazy. The violence in New York has been, for New York, has been off the charts. There's been two babies shot. There was a 1-month-old shot. There was an 11-month-old shot. There's been 5 cop shootings. There's a woman who was killed. She pushed off the train platform.
Got pushed in front of the train. It's the Bronx Fire.
Yeah, for the train. The man, this wasn't on his watch, but the man who was another Asian man who was jumped passed away after the long hospital stay. It's just so much going on in New York City right now. These two cops were shot last night. One passed away. One is in grave condition that, you know, that they're, you know, obviously trying to do everything they can do to save him. And the cops are 22 and 23. The one who died is 22. So one in the hospital now is only 23 years. He's a rookie. Shot in Harlem.
Yeah,
shot in Harlem, 135th Street. So,
on a domestic call of this was a mother and son.
Yes.
Wow.
Call to a mother and son, which sounds to me like the son was probably being irate and irrational, and the mother called and
she was a former CEO. The mother was.
Yeah, which means that I didn't know that, which that obviously means that there's more than likely a gun in the house, a firearm in the house. I don't know if that was warned or that was said to the cops. That's usually information you might want to let them know when you are dialing 911. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, but aside from that, those young men, one is, you know, like you said, hurt. One is dead.
The 22-year-old passed away.
One follower said to me, DM me, was like, I'm actually glad at this point that Maya Wiley didn't get elected because they would be saying she's a woman, she can't handle it.
Tough enough on crime.
You know, this is what happens when you are talking about defund the police, and this is because of her anti-cop stance and absolutely. Yada yada yada. They be putting this all at her feet, and that is 100% true. It's 100%.
Well, it's gonna fall to Eric's feet, right? Eric, yeah. What we're gonna see is a heavy-handed.
I was about to say
significant regression on how crime has been handled. For a very long time, we have seen things like, using air quotes, quality of life crime. Kelly, a friend to the show, said, quality of life crimes may not impact you when that shit is not impacting your quality of life, right?
Exactly.
Like, until you have to start stepping over people in the street
and human shit and all that stuff, yeah,
impacting you. But yes, it is. We're probably going to see that. There is, by all accounts, Tim, another friend to the show, Harlem residents. There's a disproportionate number of clinics in Harlem.
Yep.
Yes.
And centers for
people, methadone like clinics and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Addiction challenges and things of that nature. So we're going to see something done. I don't know what that's going to mean, but I think that the fact that we have not seen Pat Lynch screaming on our TVs yet.
Shows I saw him. He was there last night screaming. He was there last night.
Yeah, he's going to do that, but he's not mm-hmm. screaming in the traditional sense of at the mayor in a. This is on you, and this is your fault. And because if this was the Blasio, we know what would have happened. You know, the climate you've created, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. Eric is one of them, and he's going to, he's gone through the ranks, and yes,
he's
going to
release the hounds. So good luck, young niggas on the street.
Absolutely, you will absolutely see that, and I want people to understand that when you are, 25 and 26 years old, and you want to know how the crime bill occurred, you're about to see it right now.
Exactly. Right. It's easy to talk about that crime bill in retrospect. How could they do that? Well, the streets was in the 80s.
It's also fair to acknowledge that there was some that impacted us disproportionately. There's no doubt about that. And there were some unforeseen circumstances and collateral damage, in fact, right? Like we don't have to make it seem like it has to be one or the other. Like those both those things can be true, but the hammer is going to come down.
Absolutely.
I don't know how. They're probably going to start to increase those those subway patrols. And again, the patrols are always done in the ways that we know, right? We know the patrols are going to be in Williamsburg, and the patrols are going to be in Park Slope, and the patrols are going to be they're not going to be in Brownsville. They're not going to be in Bed-Stuy. No. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to be in Harlem. They're going to be in the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yes, one of the nauseous cops. I wanted to end the show with and I never watched the video because I knew I couldn't handle it. But I want to talk about Mike Todd, the pastor from Oklahoma.
Yeah,
bruh.
I never watched his video.
That big hip ass evangelical nigga. I hate that. I hate these hippie niggas.
So he's nice to the evangelicals. I don't know if he has a. I don't know. Does he have is it a mega church in Tulsa?
Yeah,
I don't know
if it's called Transformational Church. It's like if Instagram started a church.
He's performing and shit. There's like rain coming down.
And all his associate ministers, they all dress like fucking hipsters and they use a translation of the Bible that's supposed to be like plain language, but it's very like to me, some of the interpretations of the scripture take some liberties because there's one scripture that they like translated to, you can sit and brainstorm on your ideas. So I was like, ain't no brainstorm.
You saw that video?
Yeah, I didn't watch all of it. I watched the beginning. I'm not watching no man hock spit into his hand.
No, not that video. The video.
Oh, the rain video? I saw that bullshit. Yeah.
That was like when Kendrick Lamar performed with the rain on the beat.
It was like that.
Stole that shit from Kendrick.
Front row got ponchos on.
Mike Todd has also been one of the people who was trying to help usher Kanye into his little moment of Jesus.
That makes sense, because Kanye's family is from Tulsa. His mom is from Tulsa.
Oh, okay, I didn't know.
Yeah, so there's probably a family connection.
That nigga saw opportunity. Ain't no.
No. I'm saying he might have been able to get to him because he probably knew his cousin or some shit like that.
But no, I think he was able to get to him because he's around all the white evangelicals. Like he's around all the Hillsong people. Like he moves in that space. He doesn't move in a black space. Yeah. He moves in the white evangelical space. So he's not out here with like T.D. Jakes and them.
Because I don't think he, well, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't believe he is ordained.
He's not ordained. He did not go to seminary.
So remember when I questioned about that word pastor? Like it is very loosely used.
Very.
And so I think that that is partly why he's not able to sort of move in those circles.
Right, because white evangelical churches are much less, like, or what you call, like, what they even call, what they call it, charismatic. Well, we call evangelical sometimes, they call charismatic. What they're really looking for is, like, that personality in leadership, right? Mm. So I ain't never seen Mike Todd open the Bible. And I'm not saying you have to, but, like, he barely quotes scripture. In my opinion, it's bad theology, it's bad doctrine, and they just be making up shit.
He's another one that told women it don't matter how many times a man cheat, it's gonna stay with that man, it's gonna stay in the house.
He said, getting beat up by your husband, physical abuse is not a reason to leave marriage. Literally said that.
I also heard from someone, he was a former minister of sound.
Sound. Like, nigga, you was right. In charge of AV.
Yeah, the soundboard.
He was upstairs making sure the mics were on.
Right, you was making sure there wasn't no feedback.
He pushing the TV out on the cart.
Making sure Big Earl got enough mic on his bass. Nigga, the fuck out of
here. You say I call you old, but you just said pushing TV out on the cart in the church.
Yeah, in the church, you know what I'm saying? They could watch the Ten Commandments. Watch it.
but that is a part of what this, you know, what this culture is. And this is why I've never, you know, I've gone to those mega churches.
Yeah, me too.
Never feel connected in there.
Ever.
I don't leave those places filled. I don't feel any better than when I went in. Those messages are usually very generic and they are not.
They're very fluffy.
They're very fluffy. It is not. It's a very sort of broad, almost rehearsed. Listen, every good pastor is prepared, but they are not rehearsed. Correct. And there is a difference. And when you have seen orators, people who are trained in this, who've really come up in this shit, like when you are really from the church, like there is a difference. You know what I'm saying?
And
I want my 3 points and a close. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want you to give me chapter and verse. I want you to give me the 3 takeaways from that chapter and verse and apply it to real life and close
it. Bring it on home. Bring it on home, Pastor.
I want all that. I want you to tell the organist your key.
Yes.
And start singing. That's what I need, right?
So I can remote start this car while I'm in the pew and make sure.
Right. But we're getting to an era now where, like, pastors have other people writing their sermons for them. And I'm like, if you can't
ghostwriters.
If you can't write your own sermon, you might not actually be called to the pulpit.
You ain't got this. And this is also
a part, calling.
This is also a part of why I say I understand that there has been an apprehension of young people to go into the church, and we talked about those things, the repression, the meanness, and the culture that comes with that.
Judgment.
There is also a culture of structure that is completely being lost. There is a loss of eldership, if that's a word. Going to your elders to have them help you and guide you, and elders doing that, and you being open to that, to this.
There's an order, a protocol.
Yeah. There is a reason, you know, Sister Jenkins is not doing well, because they talked about that in the sick and shut-ins.
Right.
So you know where to go, right? Like, there's a purpose for it. It's not arbitrary.
Right.
And so I think that that is completely lost. And that community of church is completely lost. When I go to church now, like, it's wild, because I remember going to church, like, and most people really didn't know how they was going to get home after church. I mean, you might.
Yeah, with all the rides.
It was the rides.
The bus or somebody take you, or just the ride.
Jeffrey, go walk her to that door and make sure she get up and get in okay. That's real.
I wasn't that service today. Go take them. I wrap this up for them. Go around there and take this over to them and make
Absolutely. The deacons are coming. My mom in the hospital. I mean, my grandmother, whatever. The deacons on Communion Sunday, they would come to the hospital.
Yes.
Yeah. Give them communion.
Oh, when my grandmother, when my grandmother was ill, the pastor from her church, literally him and a small group of people from the church, they came every Sunday, not just for communion. They came every Sunday by the house because we were
checking right in
the church, to like, you know, pray with her and sing a couple songs and, you know, and
well, I remember viral clips, but viral clips is now the currency
in right.
which yeah.
we operate. Yeah. And, you know, look, I am not going to pretend like I am sort of like this devout, you know, Christian and I'm in church every Sunday and right. I know all the scripture, right? But I do know some things, okay? I know that ain't it.
I'm still looking for the message in this bit. I still don't know what Jesus is getting at.
Because even what he was trying to take it from, the scripture he was trying to interpret, here is a couple of problematic things with it, right? The first thing I want to acknowledge is what Sean was talking about is like, there are two parts to the Black church, or I'm going to say three. First is the actual, the spiritual part itself. The second is, like you said, the community and the sense of order, structure, appropriateness, leadership. A lot of people's first leadership positions are in the church, right? And I come from a family that's a very churched family, even if we're not all observant all the time. We are a very churched family. Like, you do certain things. You when there's a fellowship, we cook and we volunteer. And so for me, adulthood meant I'm active in my church, but I needed to be at a church where my pastor knew who I was, right? I don't want to have to go through eight levels of various ministers to get to my pastor. You know, that was important to me, even at a church's biggest comment. But then there's a community and there's a sense of, there's the kind of training up you get in church, like you said, the structure, the order, appropriateness, all that type of stuff. And then the music ministry, which we've talked about before, like, you feel the loss of church trained musicians in music now.
Oh yeah.
Church trained, not just the vocalist too, but the number
of producers,
like almost half the hitmen were church trained, you know, musicians, and producers, and like you, Rodney Jerkins, Teddy Riley, like all of them came up.
My man,
Pharrell,
Mario Winans,
Pharrell and Timbaland and Kojic Kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, they all came up in church, even if they're not.
Missy's a Kojic Kid too. All of them.
They all went to the same church. Yeah, so it's like we feel the loss of that. So now when you got these people who. But what Mike Todd did that bothered me, the scripture he, aside from just the act itself, the scripture he's pulling from was when Jesus spat on the ground, on dirt, to make mud, to cover a blind man's eyes as a salve. And it helped him see. But Jesus spat on the ground, on dirt, to make mud, right? So aside from spitting in your hand and hawking it up, like he was like hawking it up, which is disgusting.
Nigga had a grilled cheese sandwich earlier.
Yeah, it was disgusting. You are also likening yourself to Jesus. The pastor is not a Jesus stand-in. A pastor is to the word what a professor is to text.
Yeah, you're books, teaching, right? And interpreting.
You are a messenger. You are an interpreter. You know, at most, you know, you're akin to one of the fucking disciples, right? You never to put yourself in Jesus' shoes as a pastor and act anything out that suggests that you're him, that means that you lost the plot. Like, you're supposed to hide behind the cross. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with some of these mega churches is that members, A, don't know the word well enough for themselves to be discerning of their pastors, but B, instead of looking at their pastors as messengers, they're looking at them as source. Like, you're not supposed to look at your pastor as source. They're supposed to be messenger, guide, etc. And you start deifying the pastor. And that's how all the pastors don't get held accountable and all that other stuff. So with Mike Ty right now, I'm just like, this is shenanigans. This is pure.
And, oh, by the way, I don't know if y'all noticed, that was his brother he did that to.
It's still disgusting.
No. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying, but that's even more
monstrous. You know what I found very interesting in that? That shit reeked of charlatan. It reeked of Jim Jones. It reeked of, and when I say Jim Jones, I mean early. I don't mean like cyanide Jim Jones. I mean early Jim Jones, who was doing the trees and all that sort of stuff.
David Koresh,
tent revival shit.
Because
traveling tent revival ministry,
he understood that there was no way he could arbitrarily pull someone out of his congregation and do
right.
That. Right. And again, it just, what bothers me is that he is never pressed about the message as much as he is pressed about the engagement. And that is a dangerous tool, particularly in a church, and particularly to someone who is deemed to be responsible as a leader and a shepherd, ultimately, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
He, yeah. Like, listen, man, that nigga there, I am good.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. That was, I was, I guess, I don't know, happy is the word, but I was, I'll just say pleased for like, but that means that so many people online anyway for what that's worth. And I don't know if that's worth anything.
Yeah.
We're in our space with it. Like, what was this nigga doing? It wasn't that whole, like, half of them say, yeah. Nah, it's cool. And half was like, niggas.
So
like,
John B. Key doing? Was like, we don't do that in my church.
Enough of them. It was enough of them for him to issue a retraction or an apology.
Turned off them Instagram comments too,
because that was crazy. Hey, Ivy. So on that note, we're gonna wrap it up.
Say hello.
Y'all got any shout outs? Anything y'all want to say before I wrap it?
Shout out to the Hawk and all Bricks because they out here.
That's real.
It's cold. It's cold out there.
A little light 12. It's a little light 12. I'm about to go outside 12. And do some work.
It's a little light zero.
put your mittens on. Get on out there.
I feel like I had a shout out, but I got lost it. I need to write it.
Well, for what, on the fashion side, I just want to say peace to Virgil Abloh. Again, they had his last collection show. I think it was yesterday in Paris. I watched it online this morning. Just want to say, peace to him, trying to put his game down to the bitter end. And that's it. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Everybody be safe out there. Wear your mask. The numbers are going down, but don't be fooled.
Yeah, don't rush out there just yet. Listen, I've been outside of my house. I can count on one hand the number of times I've been outside of my house this year. So far, like literally, like out in the world, I'm not trying to.
We ain't even messing around. Y'all go. I mean, I'm outside. I'm about to go outside. I go outside every day, but it's interesting because the lines were crazy for a minute at the trucks where they do the testing. Now there's like literally no line.
Oh, last weekend they weren't bad at all. Oh, I had a car accident last weekend, but I'll tell y'all about that next show. We almost at the end. I forgot about it. But anyway, I was out last weekend, running some errands. I had a zip car. And I went past like three testing sites that were damn near empty.
That's like, the thing. There's no lines no more. Yeah, so I don't know.
But the holiday rush is, part of it is that the holiday rush is over.
True.
So people aren't as pressed because they're not about to go
see a grandma or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a weird space because those tests are also rapid tests that you get on the street, and now everybody's trying to do the PCR.
Well, some of them are some of the trucks are PCR because I know the truck I go to is PCR, but yeah, a lot of them are rapid. But there's a PCR one that I've gone to a couple of times. But
is it PCR truck by you?
Yeah, on 81st and Broadway.
Oh, shit. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a PCR truck? Mm-hmm. Outside of the CDMD?
No. It's on 181st going toward
Broadway.
The West
okay.
Side Highway.
The CDMD is hard work. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But everybody out there, stay safe.
Put a hat, an undershirt, and a coat on these babies.
A scarf.
Oh, that too.
Tired of seeing these kids out here in a hoodie.
Put a hat on that baby.
We'll put a hat on that. Put a hat on that boy.
But that child ain't got a hat on. It's too cold to have these babies outside anyway if you really want to get older.
Real talk. Yeah. So y'all be safe, and we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.